Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Kim Grinnells of Dogman.com with Chris Fetter, Scott Eklund, and Washington has defeated Boise 38-7 in the Las Vegas Bowl, and we're at Sam Boyd Stadium, and evidently it's the last game that's ever going to be played here, and we're staying at the Hard Rock Hotel, which is being torn down next month, so lots of changes going on down in Vegas, and one of the unique things where I knew something. Kind of up. I ran up in between the third and fourth quarters to take a quick leak. All the men's rooms were closed. People were kind of freaking out about that. But a little bit weird down here for this bowl, but not weird for the Husky football team today. They pretty much dominated Boise State from the get-go, and real nice win, sending Chris Peterson out the right way. Nice celebration on the field, and he did not like that Gatorade bath. But started early in the first quarter, Chris. They looked good coming out of the gate, I thought.
Yeah, they look good. I mean, yeah, they definitely, you know, defense set the tone. You know, you get that pick. It looked like Boise State had some things going for them a little bit. Hank Backmeyer, their freshman quarterback, had come back. I don't think he'd played in, what was it, like seven games, something like that. But it looked like he was doing some things. And I had actually saw Boise State when they played at Florida State. And, you know, he had done some really, really good things in that game. And he was starting to show some things, but when the rush came and he kind of threw up that floater to Miles Bryant, you kind of knew, wait a second, this is this little different thing here. He's maybe a little bit off, because maybe that rust had shown a little bit. But I thought they did well to start off defensively, and then to go out and score the way that they did right away. I thought that was a really, really good thing too. I mean, the way that slant to Andre Bocelli, I don't know if you guys kind of looked at it the same way I did, but it kind of looked to me like kind of a mirror image of the slant touchdown that Eason threw to Bocelli at BYU. And because instead of from the right side, it was from the left side. And he just kind of split those guys and just kind of went to the house. So I thought it was a great start. Obviously, right. It slowed down a little bit. But overall, it just never looked like Washington was ever going to get threatened.
And Chris, you mentioned with their quarterback not playing in the last seven games, Brian Harsin, the Boise State coach, was not happy when being asked about it. He accused the media of trying to start something when somebody asked him if he had wished he'd played him more during the season. But yeah, he was he got a little red nose, red-eared, or whatever you want to call it when asked about that. But their quarterbacks weren't impressive. I thought the Washington defense played really, really well, especially the secondary. Boise State just had a tough time getting anything going, Scott.
Yeah, they did. And Washington only surrendered 266 yards against a team that was averaging, I want to say, 442 yards per game, roughly, something like that. And they only surrendered 7 points to a team that was averaging almost 37 points a game. So overall, I think I still expected Washington to win this, but I did not expect the dominating defensive performance. I thought that Boise State would do a little bit more offensively against Washington's defense. And but Washington, you know, the coaches had these guys dialed in, and they were ready to go, like you said, Kim, from the get-go.
And Chris, you had mentioned something at halftime, that how long it had been since Boise had not scored in the first half.
It'd been, I think, 5 years.
2014.
Yeah, so it'd been 5 years. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So impressive game by the defense, but you know, to be honest with you, I think the story of the game was Washington's offensive line. Without Trey Adams, without Jackson Kirkland, they had to switch some things around, sending Jared Hilvers out to left tackle. They put Henry Robertson at right tackle, and then Victor Kern got some playing time, and then Henry Bainivalu at right guard. So a lot of newness up in that offensive line, and I thought they did a pretty good job.
I definitely thought they did a really good job tonight. I mean, the one thing I would say is you know, I was going through it, and you would have liked to seen them rush for the ball for a little bit more than 118 yards against a smallish front seven for Boise State. But and they surrendered three sacks. Now, granted, two of them were because Eason held the ball a little bit too long, and they allowed a few hits on Eason. But I think for the most part, considering the circumstances, I think the offensive line, considering how patchwork it was, I think they did pretty well.
Richard Newton was running hard. Savon Ahmed did his usual dancing out there. But Richard Newton, 15 carries for 69 yards. Savon Ahmed, 6 for 20. But I thought the most impressive run of the day was the one that got called back, the touchdown by Cam Davis. What did you guys see on that?
It wasn't a hold.
I was going to say it was weird because it was the only penalty of the night that was called against Washington. And it was – now, granted, I mean, if Jared Hilbert's just kind of lets go, I mean, he's out of the play. I mean, he didn't need to do it. But it was just a – it was a weird call because I guarantee you they could have probably called something like that on at least every other play of the game on either team.
Yeah, they called it on Wattenberg, but they made a mistake on who they called it on, right?
Right. It was on Jared Hilbert's.
Yeah, and Hilbert's, you watch it and you're like, where's the hold? I mean, I know
he was falling down. It was like he was falling down. He just kind of grabbed him, and I just was like, okay. Yeah. I mean, it just looked so innocuous, and it was. And now, granted, I know because it's away from the play, it doesn't necessarily mean it shouldn't be called, but it was one of those. It wouldn't have influenced anything, and that's what makes it so frustrating. Because if you're Hilbert's and you're falling down, just fall over to the right or so. I mean, just, you don't need to lean on the guy. You don't need to fall down and grab him on the way down.
Right.
It was just a weird play.
Was it the play after that that they ran the Wildcat with Newton throwing it to Bynum?
Not,
was it right
not
after?
Not the play after.
Not the play
it was
after.
Like two
but,
or three, it was like two or three plays after.
Yeah, it was funny with Chris Peterson because he was pretty jovial in the press conference after the game, more so than we're used to seeing, and some of it having to do with the last time he's having to face the media. But when asked about it, he said that that play was – I asked him, was that a play he called or is that Bush? And he immediately said, oh, that was Bush's call. And I said, what'd you think, you know, when you heard that? And he said, I loved it. And he said he just wanted to make sure everybody realized that Boise State had one trick play that went for a first down. And he said, but we had one trick play that went for a touchdown. He seemed pretty happy about that. So,
you know, I think it's because he was most happy that that was the very last press conference he's ever going to have to do. I think that's what he was so happy about. That obviously that and the win. But, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's it was pretty clear that if you watch the video of it, we'll have the video up of it. On Dogman a little bit later, but yeah, I mean, he's clearly happy that this thing is over.
And if you're listening to this podcast, I highly, highly, highly encourage you to watch the post-game press conference. It's Coach Pete actually letting his guard down a little bit with us, which isn't something he normally does a lot of. So it was good to see him. But, you know, getting back to the game, I thought the Washington defensive line had a great game. I thought that the secondary had a good game. Eddie Ulofosio, boy, he got hit hard. And he went back to the locker room and he came out in street clothes, didn't finish the rest of the game, but overall the performance by the defense and what Jimmy Lake and Pete Kwiatkowski were able to put together was impressive.
Yeah, the hit on Ulofosio was actually friendly fire. It was Josiah Bronson just hammered him right in the, I think the top of Bronson's helmet hit Ulofosio right in the face. You know, right in his face mask. And basically, I mean, Chris, you were watching it with me, and Kim, I don't know what your angle was, but
I was about 20 feet from it.
Yeah, I mean, he looked like just a sack of potatoes when he fell down.
Oh yeah, no, he fell down. He fell down face. He went face first, like he had gotten knocked out.
It was what it sounded like. You just go, whoa. I mean, that hit the whole sideline, went silent.
But yeah, you know, it looked like he got knocked out initially.
Yeah, guys got kind of dinged up in the game, you know. Richard Newton, you know, went out a little bit. Savon Ahmed got dinged a little bit. Levi Onwuzurike got dinged a little bit. You know, a lot of guys getting nicked up, banged up.
Nick Harris.
All of them went back in except for Eddie. But, you know, it was a physical game. Boise State's... They're a good team. I, you know, and everybody says, you know, wants to say that, you know, they're a legit Power 5 school, but you know, let's be honest. I mean, I think if they played in the Pac-12, they'd be a middle of the road Pac-12 team. That's what I saw.
Well, I mean, I know you think there's, you know, they came out and they're a smaller team and all that stuff, and there's no doubt that, you know, when they came out in the third quarter and they kind of hit Washington, they had a good quarter. I mean, they outgained them, I think, about 120 to 30 some yards. I mean, they had the possession. They, you know, that's when they scored. But, you know, it was that fourth quarter where you could tell when you saw Richard Newton start to run the ball a little bit downhill. And, you know, they outgained him, Washington outgained him like 125 yards to like 50 yards. But what was most telling, Kim, was they were able to hold on to the ball. They had, you know, they were only one of three on third down, but they were two of two on fourth downs. They averaged 7 yards a play. They had a time of possession. They had the ball 11 minutes and 14 seconds of that fourth quarter alone. I mean, that's how you salt a game away. That was very almost kind of Apple Cup-esque in terms of you're going to need to take the ball away from us and we're not giving it to you. And, you know, so without having any turnovers, you know, by forcing the three turnovers and doing that kind of thing, I mean, that's just a recipe on how you win games flat out. And Brian Harsin, he even said as much after the game. If you go to their press conference, he said, you know, it wasn't anything. You know, I know, like you said, he kind of got a little red-assed about asking about the quarterbacks and stuff. But he goes, hey, this came down to not being able to stop the run, not being able to stop them on offense, and turnovers, and not being able to execute. It's, you know, just basic football stuff.
When you get when you play a game where you have no turnovers, no fumbles, no interceptions, and only one penalty, I like your chances. They only had one penalty. It cost them with the touchdown coming back. They scored on that drive anyways. But, yeah, just no turnovers and one penalty. That's a good mix. Real quick, you mentioned time of possession there, but Washington led overall time of possession 34-06 to 25-54 for Boise. Washington ran 68 plays. Boise ran 59 and, you know, take away that last drive where they were just playing ultra, ultra prevent, and it probably wouldn't have been that close. Yeah, it was funny, also, by the way, after the last turnover, just real quick, the last turnover at the end of the game, you know, there was still a couple seconds left on the clock, and they were trying to get – everybody was running out on the field, and Chris had got his ice bath, and they were trying to get guys off the field because one more play, they had to take a knee.
Yeah, I was going to say, too, that Harsin also mentioned how field position played a huge part in this game. So I want to give credit to the special teams guys, guys like Joel Whitford and Race Porter and those guys, and keeping them, especially in the regular field of play. Kickoffs, I know, were a little spotty at times. You know, Tim Horn, he would boom a couple out of the end zone, and then he'd hit a couple short. Who knows if that was tactical or not. But you look at their drive, where they started their drives, Kim. You know, they started at their own 17, 19, their own 4, their own 33, their own 1, their own 31, their own 23. They only started one drive in Washington territory, whereas, you know, Washington started two drives. But they also started at their own 48, their own 46, their own 44, their own 40, their own 45. So that'll tell you a little bit about what Washington was able to do in terms of when they had the field position, they capitalized on it. And if they weren't able to move the ball, they put Boise State at a real disadvantage in terms of trying to move the ball.
Joel went for three punts for 47 yards, but boy, he made them count. And then he was able to really hang on to the ball and let his guys get downfield before he got that rugby kick with a big bounce. Race Porter had one for 46, and it made a huge difference. But Scott's special teams, I thought, played really, really, really well tonight. And it was good to see Chico back there returning kicks, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was interesting. I put it in my game analysis piece that Chris, you can, or maybe you, Kim, you could tell me who was the one who had the punt that ended up at the 1 yard line.
I'm pretty sure that was Joel.
Okay, because Porter had one too. So
I thought Porter had the last kick of the last punt.
Was that what it was? Okay,
I can't remember.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look now.
Whatever it was down by Kyler Gordon right at the 1 yard line. You couldn't ask for a better punt than that one. I mean, it was beautiful.
Four punts, yeah. Two inside the 20, by the way.
Yeah, and average 47 between the two of them. And Whitford actually slowed up what might have been a game-changing play. because Avery Williams was returning that punt. He might have gotten out of – gotten far enough away from Benning Potuai, but Joel ended up getting in his way just enough for Benning to make the tackle and stopped him at the Husky 46. Well, four plays later, Washington had the ball at their own 40 because they stopped Boise State on that fourth down play.
Yeah, actually, I was looking at it. Sorry, Race Porter had the first punt of the game, which ended up at the, if I remember right, it was downed at the 4-yard line.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Elijah Molden, leading tackler with 9. Brandon Wellington with 8. Trent McDuffie and Levi Onwuzurike, both with 4. Elijah Molden, MVP, came up big today, too.
Yeah, he did. That interception that he had, Chris, I don't know if you saw, that was an incredible catch by him. I mean, from a defensive back standpoint, that was like a receiver catching the ball. You'd be hard-pressed to find a lot of receivers who would have made a play like that.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, too, I think Ryan Bowman had an influence on that play where yep. where the quarterback, I was at Backmire, he had to throw over Bowman to do it, and that's what allowed Molden to basically jump the play.
Yep, that was exactly what it was, and that was why Molden was able to get the overthrow and return it. I actually thought he was going to be able to get a chance to return it for a touchdown, but instead he puts it down at the I think it was the Boise State 24, and Washington ended up getting a field goal whatever it was. He put them in position to score a touchdown, I believe.
I don't want to get into it too deep. We'll save it for another podcast. But Chris Peterson said it's going to feel great tomorrow to have to wake up and not have a lot to do. But hey, Pete, your contract runs through January 31st, and December 31st. Jimmy doesn't take over till the 1st. Jen Cohen on the sidelines, she was pretty emotional post-game, and that last touchdown, she was pretty fired up. Jimmy Lake was stalking the sidelines a little bit differently than I've seen him in the past. On the post-game ceremony, Coach Pete wanted Jimmy Lake to come up and share in that, which he did. You know, it was just an interesting post-game with Coach Pete. Tried to talk a little bit to Bush Hamden after the game, and he was a little distant. Same with Coach Bonifa. You know, so we'll just have to wait and see what changes are coming about, because I don't think there's any doubt some changes are going to be coming. And, you know, like I said, we could save that for another podcast. But just down here, Chris, you kind of jokingly said to me after being at the Peach Bowl, the Fiesta Bowl, and the Rose Bowl, this bowl, God, it's kind of like trading places, because I'm telling you, this is not any of those bowl games. Just the setup, everything. Those other places were first class, and we're playing in a stadium that's getting closed down. We're staying at a hotel that's getting closed down, and it sure feels like it at times.
Yeah, but it's you know, the weirdest thing about it is that Washington football's done for 2019 on December 21st, which, you know, I'd have to go back. I can look in the record books right now. I'm trying to think. When is the earliest a season has been done, you know, whether it was under Chris Peterson or not.
Last time we were here was Sark against Boise State.
Yeah, that was December 22nd. See, I got you on that one.
When's the last time the Washington coaches had a chance to spend Christmas at home and not be, you know, training for the bowl game?
So it's basically the earliest in a decade, which means, you know, they've played in 10 bowl games since. But again, it does feel weird, like you said, going to 3 New Year's 6 games and going through kind of that process. And especially when you're doing media and it's availability and all that kind of thing. And then all of a sudden you're having to rush through all this stuff. And you know, like for instance, at the Rose Bowl last January or last end of December, you know, you got an opportunity to talk to every coach. You got an opportunity to talk to basically every player for, you know, it was a set standard part of time, but it was, you had opportunities, you had availability, you had access. You had not almost here. None of that in this game.
None. Zero. Zip. Practice, we got 20 minutes of stretching. We got Brandon Wellington and Aaron Fuller each for about 3 minutes. And then Coach Pete, and, you know, at the press conference where he's not really saying anything. But anyways, but let's go ahead and wrap this up. We've still got a lot of work to do. We'll have another podcast. I'd like to have one up for you guys on Monday. We'll talk about changes coming about and what all that means, as well as wrapping up signing day. But Chris Vetter's final thoughts.
Yeah, just, first of all, I will take an extra large helping of humble pie with my prediction. I was the only one of the Dogman guys that predicted a Boise State victory. So I will eat it with a big grin on my face. I honestly felt like this was the game that neither team wanted to be at. This was a consolation prize specifically for Boise State because they were arguably one game away from potentially being in a playoff conversation. They would have been the fourth unbeaten team in FBS besides LSU, Ohio State, and Clemson. And, you know, I don't think they would have gotten in, but you never know. And so that's the team that Washington was facing. And, yeah, a lot of people can say now in hindsight, oh, yeah, they were overrated. They're from the Mountain West. They're a group of five, all that stuff. I guarantee you none of that matters right now. What I found also really interesting, Kim and Scott, that, you know, you go back to 2013 and you go to that first game in the new renovated Husky Stadium, and Boise State comes in with Chris Peterson and they lose 38-6. What was the score tonight? 38-7. It is really weird how life works sometimes. And it feels like it is a fitting, not just so much a fitting ending to the Chris Peterson era at Washington, but, you know, just everything on the field too. It felt as dominant as Washington was against Boise State that day 6 years ago, they were just as dominant tonight. And it was good to see. And I'm really glad that Coach Pete was able to go off on his terms and the players and the coaches were able to do it for him, because I know how much that meant to him. And so now that they can go on, and now Jimmy Lake and his staff can go and really attack the rest of the recruiting process and obviously going into the 2020 season.
Scott Eklund, final thoughts.
Well, I think it's, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the rest of the coaching staff. But right now, I think the Huskies are just enjoying this win, and the Husky fans should enjoy this win. It was against a Mountain West team, but they were 12-1. They're a talented team, and Washington came in and put it to them and basically put their foot down and imposed their will on their opponent. And it was good to see, good way to go into the offseason, and now we start the Jimmy Lake era.
I said to Will Harris down in the field after the game, you're just getting started. He goes, you have no idea. And I think this is the start of taking this to the whole next level. You know, first of all, we've been doing this for a long time. We've been dealing with Jim Lambright, Keith Gilbertson, Rick Neuheisel, Steve Sarkisian, Tyrone Willingham, and Chris Peterson. And Chris Peterson is as good a person, as good a football coach as we've ever dealt with. He didn't like dealing with us, but he always was the two things, and the only two things I expect. He was always professional, and he was always cordial. He's going to be missed. He's a big, big, big presence on the culture of this program. He's still going to be around. I still think he's going to have a heavy influence on the culture of this program. I think he's going to be there when Jimmy Lake needs him. I think that when he needs it for the culture and motivation and leadership, he'll be there. But knowing Chris, you know, as little as I do, but I think when it comes to football stuff, he's going to try to stay out of that as much as possible. So it's going to be interesting. And boy, the Jimmy Lake era, you know, we've got some coaching decision. You know, we've got definitely at least one hire. We'll see where the rest of it goes. We've got a recruiting class that's going to be filled out. And, boy, I think it's just going to be really interesting. And then, you know, who's staying, who's going. You know, when you take a look at Jacob Eason and everything I'm hearing, he's going to wait until they figure out what's going to go on with the offense before he makes a decision. I tried to get out of Levi Onwuzurike, whether he was coming back or not. And he just smiled at me like, yeah, I'm not going there. Elijah Molden's got a decision. Some other guys too. So we'll see what happens. But, hey, it's the end of the Chris Peterson era at Washington. You know, a little bit sad, but going out on a great note. So for all of us at dogman.com, end of football season. Big thanks to our interns, Jack McCauley and George Johnson. They've been a tremendous help in the background. A lot of other people helping us along the way. Special shout out to Ryland Spencer. Ryland's always there to help us in anything he needs. Also, Brandon Huffman, Greg Biggins, Blair Angulo. Anybody I missed on that, guys?
I can't think. That's a pretty good list. I think that's pretty good.
I think Andy, you're good.
Andy?
Andy down in San Francisco. And one more person, Lindsey Eklund, for putting up with Scott so we don't have to. So anyways, for all of us at dogman.com, I'm Kim Grinnell, along with Chris Fetter, Scott Eklund. Go Dogs.
Should you ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount+. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.